This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. When the Supremes were a popular trio back in the 1960s, I was one of those teenagers who sang their songs into my hairbrush, mimicking their moves in my bathroom mirror. They had a series of back-to-back hits that made them one of the most popular groups of the time. Here's a montage of Where Did Our Love Go, Baby Love, Back in My Arms, and Stop in the Name of Love. Those hit songs and many others performed by the Supremes were written by Brian Holland, Lamont Dozier, and Eddie Holland. The African American Museum of Philadelphia is presenting an exhibit, Come See About Me, the Mary Wilson Collection, which runs from January 25th through June this year. Our guest, Mary Wilson, was a founding member of the Supremes and stayed with the group as other singers came and went until it disbanded. Her collection includes many of the gorgeous gowns worn by the trio over the years. Mary Wilson now has a career as a solo performer. She's been involved in a number of humanitarian causes, including speaking out against landmines, and has been active in truth in music legislation. And Mary Wilson, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how did you end up with all these beautiful gowns?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where when a person would lead the group, then the gowns would have to stay because the group was continuing on. And that's how I ended up with all the gowns, because I was the last person there.
And how many gowns do you have?
Well, it's hard. You know what? It really is hard to tell. Right now, in the exhibit itself, probably about 30 gowns. Mm. However, there's so many more. There's some that have disappeared. Because when Motown left it, Detroit, and they moved out to L.A., the building was sort of disbanded, you know, just left there, and the gowns were stored there. So we're not sure where they are. Some have landed at Las Vegas. One set is at the Hard Rock Casino there in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
I've bought a couple off of eBay.
I read that.
Yes. You know, so but I did end up with quite a few of them, and they were kept in boxes. I had them in boxes because I moved around quite a bit, and it was amazing because I was afraid that when I actually opened the box, you know, all the gowns would just be just tattered and torn, but they really, most of them survived. I do have some where, in fact, when people come to the museum, they'll notice that some sets are not full. Some sets are maybe one, some sets are two, and then we have some, of course, that are the three gowns. And that mainly is because it's been 50-some years,
and some
of them just did not hold up, you know, as well.
What size were you all? Because I have to say, they're mm-hmm. very slim gowns.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I cannot get my leg or arm in any of them. But, you know, who knew we were that small? I had no idea.
You were really small.
We were really small. I mean, Diane was small. I was next. And Flo was considered very big, but she was size 8.
Wow.
Which is not big at all, right? But, you know, so it's amazing that they have survived.
I have to say, I was over there yesterday at the museum looking at, and they're all
covered in plastic.
Covered in plastic, mm-hmm. and until the exhibition. Mm-hmm. But there's a beautiful green one that you wore actually when you were pregnant, and was mm-hmm. designed so that your mm-hmm. your little baby bump would be, I guess, beautifully on display in a way.
Right. Well, you know, I was very fortunate that at that particular time, it was in the 70s, and I had just gotten married, and throughout the 70s, I was you know, expecting my children, and we were traveling around the world. So I didn't want to stop, and I was very energetic, and I looked good and a whole bit, so I just told the designer to just make me a fourth copy of you know, the set, so that a fourth, and so that I could continue to work and look good. So now when I see the young ladies on the covers, you know, and they're bearing it all, I'm like, I did that in the 70s.
But that was pretty groundbreaking in the 70s. If you were pregnant, you were told, don't go to work.
Yes, I mean, there were a lot of taboos back in those days, you know, when you didn't talk about certain things, and that was one of them. But yeah, I did that then, and a lot of times when I see the young ladies today, the actresses and the young singers and whatever, and they're doing these things, I'm like, well, I did that in the 60s and the 70s. Been there, done that.
But did you, and I said in my introduction, and this was true, I mean, I remember so vividly being a teenager, listening to the Supremes, you know, trying to look and act like the Supremes, not particularly successful as a white girl. Mm-hmm. But did you have any sort of idea at that time the kind of impact your music was having across the country?
Well, you know, it came in stages, right? Because obviously, and I always like to go back to this stage because that's the way it was.
Sure.
But in the 60s, when we started, there were very few women, hardly any women around the world who were executives like they are now, or like yourself. There were no female DJs. The women were not in the workplace unless they were just subservient type things. So a lot of things have changed. And then the most important thing to us was that there are very few black women, black people or black women in those areas. So when we started becoming very famous, we did realize that, hey, this is, you know, we're moving. It's like that. What's that TV show, Moving On Up?
Sure.
And so, you know, we knew that we were different. Our parents had, you know, raised us and tell us to be very careful out there because, you know, you're not da-da, and you got to be, everything you do, it's got to be perfect because you will be judged on that. So, you know, we were very, very aware that we had become into a different position, that the civil rights movement was really in full swing in the mid-60s there. So we were one of the ones who knew that. I remember when Martin Luther King was shot, and we all went to the funeral, and it was massive. All of the entertainers who were there, you know, the Sammy Davises, Harry Belafonte, you know, just everyone was there. And so we were aware that we were in that movement at the front, on the front lines there. And you know, we had to have our best foot forward, as our parents always said.
Well, I was looking at some old YouTube videos of some of those early performances, and you were also extremely glamorous.
Yes, yes.
I mean, how important was that, even as a group, to look as good as you did?
Well, you know, that's something that we didn't think about at first. Okay, it was just the way we came, let's put it that way. And we grew up in families where, and the community where the black women were very well dressed. I mean, they were sharp, okay, in his face.
No grungy blue
jeans. Oh, no, our aunts and moms and, you know, they were all, if you would go to church, I mean, it was quite an array of beauty. Everyone dressed to the tens, I guess they said, or the nines, whatever it was. And, yeah, so glamour was something that we grew up around. We had role models like Lena Horne, you know, that's who our parents, our moms, looked up to. And so, therefore, it was in our household. I recall when I was about 8, I think it was, I dressed up in my aunt's clothes. And my aunt was a very small lady. And so, I guess I was about 8. So she had bought all of these new outfits to go on this, I think it was a cruise. And in those days, for a black person going on a cruise, that was a big deal. I think it was just around Detroit River there.
But anyway, but nonetheless, a cruise.
She had all these beautiful outfits. And I decided to have a tea party. and all of these great dresses, because every day I would see her come in and look at the dresses and dress up, you know, and then look in the mirror and all those kind of things. So I did the same thing when she went to work, because my aunt and uncle raised me. And so when she came home and found all the dresses, like, really messed up. We had stuffed them back in the closet and a whole bit, thinking we had done the right thing at 8 years old. And my aunt went berserk. She said, you're screaming all over the house. And so my uncle, who actually is my dad, I mean, he raised me as my dad. Yeah. And he said, Maymay, I'm going to have to give you a spanking, because she's not going to want to go on the cruise, and you're going to make my life a wreck the rest of the year. And da, da, da. And true enough, I mean, I got the beating of my life.
Oh, really?
But I mean, I got tea. Not, it wasn't tea. We had watermelon, right? It was a tea party, me and my dolls and a whole bit. So I was always, you know, dressing up. That was something that was in me. And Flo and Diane, they were the same. I remember we bought our little pearls from Woolworths. You know, but we liked to dress up.
Sure.
So that was our calling card, to be glamorous.
You were actually born in Mississippi, grew up in Detroit, and so what kind of music did you grow up listening to?
Oh, are you kidding? We grew up listening to R&B and gospel, because everyone sang in the choir. I mean, I never did, I don't think. But we listened to R&B. I remember Bill Williams was one of the first records I recall. And one of my favorite records was Jim Danny to the Rescue. Go, Jim Danny. Go, Jim Danny. Jim Danny on the mountaintop, 20,000 feet to drop. And so, you know, we listened to the music that our families and all listen to.
And did someone say to you, hey, you've got a really good voice?
No. But I was in all of the glee clubs, the choirs, the ensemble. I remember in kindergarten, or maybe the first grade, I was in one of the earlier, you know, musical groups. And we went on a field trip, which was the Ford Auditorium, I think it was, in Detroit, Michigan, Rotunda. And I remember all the choirs from around Detroit were there. And so ever since then, I became a member of all of the musical groups. Mm-hmm. But I just did it because, you know, that's just didn't think I had anything special.
Well, we're almost having a break here, but you became friends with Florence Ballard.
Right? Well, that happened, yeah.
It's your new high school?
It's kind of a long story, so I'll try to make it short.
Okay.
But in elementary school, they had a talent show. Not judging or anything like that, just a show. If you wanted to be on it, you could do it, and we did. I did, and Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers were on TV, and I saw them. So I thought I'd go on this show at school and just imitate them. And I did. You know, put their music on, and I was just mimicking whatever, and the crowd was going crazy. And then Florence, whom I didn't really know, went up and sang Ave Maria. She's like, Ave Maria. Now, we're only 12 and 13 years old. You know, and I went over to her and I said, my God, you have a beautiful voice. And she said, you had the crowd in the gymnasium just going crazy. And if anyone puts a group together, let's remember it. So that's how she and I became friends.
Well, I want to pick up on that after this very short break, talking with Mary Wilson, an original Supreme. And we're talking about her life. There's an exhibit at the African American Museum opening later this week, runs through June, and it features many of the gowns that our guest has collected and saved over the years. We'll be right back.
The National Museum of American Jewish History supports WHYY and presents Beyond Race, Beyond Faith, a musical evening with intercultural journeys, Wednesday, January 30th at 7. Diverse cultures through world-class performances featuring acclaimed cellist and intercultural journeys founder Udi Bar-David, master storyteller and singer Charlotte Blake Alston, soprano virtuoso and executive director of Art Sanctuary Valerie Gay, and Freedom Theater actor and dancer Khalil Munir. 215-923-3811 or nmajh.org.
Teachers can learn to guide students through the basic skills they'll need to create great documentaries. Sign up now for Teacher Documentary Production, a two-session course at WHYY's Hamilton Public Media Commons, Saturday, February 16th and 23rd. Teachers will record and edit media and receive our complete documentary workshop curriculum for students grades 6 through 12. 10 hours of PA Act 48 credit and documentation for New Jersey and Delaware. Register at whyy.org/teachers.
President Obama says he's putting the force of his office behind his plans to tackle gun violence, but will it work? And how should policymakers balance public safety with respecting the rights of the mentally ill? We'll speak with two mental health professionals to weigh in on the president's plan next time on Tell Me More from NPR News.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Mary Wilson, an original Supreme. There's an exhibit at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, Come See About Me. Features more than 30 gowns worn by members of the Supremes and has been collected and saved by our guest, Mary Wilson. The exhibit also puts the careers of the Supremes into a historical and musical context. Mm-hmm. Mary Wilson has gone on to have a solo singing career, and she's worked on a number of humanitarian causes as well, which I do want to talk with you mm-hmm. about. But I can't resist talking with you about the evolution of the Supremes. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Your group was the Primettes, I guess, in the beginning before it evolved
yes.
into the Supremes.
Yes, after Florence asked me about, if I wanted to join a group, which she did like a month after we had met. Yeah. And she said some guys had come over to her house, one of which I think was dating her sister or something like that. And they had this group going called the Primes. And so she was supposed to get a couple of girls, and she told them about me. Then Diane lived across the street, whom I didn't really know at all at that time. So I met Diane and Flo pretty much the same time. Mm-hmm. And so these guys asked us if we could sing, and we didn't really know each other that well. We had never really sang together anything, but singing was the new thing in the projects. And we said, yeah, okay, sure. So we went to their apartments, which had our parents known at the time, they would have killed us. But we did, and the guys put us together. Now, what's unique about the story is that two of the guys went on to become two members of the Temptations.
Oh, wow.
That was Eddie Kendricks, who had the falsetto voice, you know, the really high voice there, and Paul Williams. And so we went to their apartments, and they put us together with another girl, Betty McGlon, and that's how we started out as the Primettes. And so for, next couple of years, we sang around Detroit at the record hops and this and that, and the DJs were, DJs were the rage. They could make or break a record or whatever. And so we just did that for a couple mm-hmm. of years. And eventually we got the book and said, hey, we're singing with all these people who are recording. Why don't we think of recording? And that's when we went to Motown Records. Yeah. And we were turned down.
I was going to say, I was reading that Barry Gordy turned you down.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
come?
Well, we didn't find out really how come until years later and we figured it out. But initially, I think he was like, he said to us after we auditioned, and we did a great job, too. I mean, we really did a fabulous job. He said, well, come back and see me after you graduate from high school.
Too young?
Yeah, too young. But we didn't know that then. We were like, I remember Florence saying, well, he can't be that great if he doesn't know how good we are. Now, we're only like
that's the spirit.
We're only about 15 years old by this time, right? And but eventually, we wormed our way into mm-hmm. Motown by just going there every day and hanging out. And pretty soon they signed us. So that's how we became. And then, of course, when we went there, Mr. Gordy's, he said he would sign the contract on us, but he didn't like our name. Primettes. And so Florence came up with the name Supremes.
And did you know when you signed that contract, did you know anything about contracts if you were, a 15, 16-year-old
had
girl?
No clue. All we wanted to do was be there.
Right. And sing and record.
And record. And, it was one of those things. In fact, I was giving an interview this morning with a young lady, and she was saying, you guys kind of got the raw deal. And in many ways, we did in terms of not having our own management lawyer, let's say, mm-hmm. to help us sign a contract, because we did sign away our name, Supremes. We signed it away without even knowing that we had done so, because we didn't have a lawyer.
Right. Owned by Motown, then.
Yes, it was owned by Motown.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The studio there was referred to, or at least I read, was referred to as the Snake Pit. Was that a name that...
Well, we were ladies. We never used anything like that.
Oh, okay.
But I'm told but I'm told that that's kind of what the people, the musicians and the writers who all work there mm-hmm. on a daily basis, I think that's something that they did say. We knew it as Studio A. And it is Right now, people come from around the world to see this building, and it is a smaller place. And we called it Studio A. You know, it was Studio A.
But I'm sure looking at it now, it seems like
little,
and you know, push buttons and
very
analog.
Well, no, they've left it the same.
Yeah.
They really, it's a landmark now, and they've left it the same as it was, which is really quite kind of nice. One little recorder type thing.
Amazing.
Yes, yes.
Holland Dozier and Holland wrote a lot of your hit songs.
Yes, and you know there were loads of writers and producers there whom we worked with early on. Smokey Robinson being one of the Miracles. You had people like Mickey Stevenson who did a lot of things with Stevie Wonder. You had a whole bunch of wonderful writers. But what happened was after we released about six or seven records, Mr. Gordy said, "I see you girls are really serious, you know. And so I'm going to put you with one of my top writing teams." And that's when he assigned Holland Dozier and Holland, who actually are two brothers, Eddie and Brian Holland and Lamont Dozier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that's when our, you know, we had five consecutive number ones. And then all totaled, I think there were, that the Hollands did, were 10 number ones. Wow. And then we had a couple more by other people. So 12 number one million selling records. And in the 60s, that was quite big.
Indeed. And there's this up-and-coming group, the Supremes, with five consecutive number one songs.
Well, yes, and it was just great. We started touring all over the world. We did command performances with the royal family in England. One of the gowns, which I don't know if you actually recognized yesterday when you went there, is it's called the Queen Mother gown, and it's completely beaded from head to toe, neck, you know, down to the wrist, down to the beads, sequins, rhinestones, pearls, I mean, everything on it, and they weigh like 35 pounds each. But, you know, we started wearing these gorgeous gowns and touring the world and hanging out with royalties, and just, it was just a fun time. And England has still been one of my favorite places. Great Britain was where we really became very famous. Even now, the gown exhibit opened there at the Victoria and Albert's Museum in Great Britain, in London, actually. And then it toured for 2.5 years over there. So we're like their children. I remember the first time we landed in England, the front page, we were on the cover of every front newspaper, and one of the papers said, three black negresses have just landed on the shores of Great Britain. And we're like, where? But, you know, that was the tone. So we kind of really introduced, you know, black was beautiful. You know, you had your other wonderful ladies, Josephine Baker and all, who had gone there. But here are three.
Yes.
You know, three. And the music business was so new, and we were accepting the Beatles here. So you had that opening, the world kind of, the boundaries were torn down. And then this music came through. And like you said, you know, you grew up and you had the hairbrushes and all
that
stuff.
In the mirror. Do all the moves.
I remember one lady said she had the vacuum cleaner hose. But, yeah.
Or deodorant. I mean, there were many things you could hold in your
hands.
And
when I do my shows, which I do quite often, you know, women come up on stage and they say, you know, and it's all, now it's all colors. Because you remember before, on some of the album covers, they couldn't even have black faces on them, you know, because it just wasn't, you know, white folks didn't look at the black faces. And so one time we were working in Eden Rock at, it was in Florida. And I think it was Eden Rock or Fountain Blue Hotel. And this Jewish lady came up to me and she says, "You know, when you girls are on Ed Sullivan's show, I allow my family to watch you all the time." So my brother, who was like a black militant type guy, right? He's like, "Mary, what the does she mean by she allows her family to watch us?" You know, but that's the way it was back then. And, you know, thankfully, you know, we were part of that, helping the change and seeing that black was beautiful, as James Brown said.
Indeed.
I'm black and I'm beautiful.
Mary Wilson, our guest today on Radio Times, an original Supreme, stayed with the group for many years until it disbanded. She now has a solo singing career. She's also worked on a number of humanitarian causes, and there's an exhibition at the African American Museum opening later this week, runs through June. It features more than 30 gowns worn by members of the Supremes, and it also puts their careers into a musical context and a historical context, and that's our topic for today's Radio Times. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. There are always those stories of people who grew up in modest surroundings. All of a sudden, they become famous and they can't deal with it. Was fame a hard thing for you to deal with?
Me?
You?
Oh no, I love being out there. But yeah, you know, it's an individual thing.
Right.
I mean, it really depends on who you are as an individual. Many people do not like being away from home. They don't like traveling. They don't like different
the spotlight. Things. Even
I love people. I love as I've gotten older though, I'm a bit more closed than I used to be. I guess because I know people more now, and I know that there are deep, dark secrets that people carry around. But when I was growing up, for me, it would just gave me this opportunity to, because I always read fairy tale books when I was younger, and I was always alone. My aunt and uncle worked two and three jobs, and so I was alone a lot, and I would just sit there and fantasize. So for me, it just, the traveling and being out there kind of brought to me what I always, you know, wanted to know, what's going on out there in the world. Mm-hmm. Some people just, it's not made for them, and they don't like people, or they're bashful, you know, so they don't care for all of that. It really is an individual thing.
And it can be hard on the group because you're living and traveling so much together as well.
Well, yeah, any group of people, you know, you have your differences.
Sure.
Let's face it, there are just things that you just don't agree with. It doesn't mean that you don't like the people, things of that nature. But you did mention something about the 50th anniversary for the Supremes. Is actually 54 years.
54, wow.
But there's a magazine out that I and my friend put together, Mark Beagle, who's an author of many books, actually. And he has helped me write my books as well. But we put together this magazine called The 50th Anniversary of the Supremes' First Album, Meet the Supremes. And it's on the newsstands now. It's a beautiful magazine. It has my picture on the front cover, and then it has Flo and Diane on there as well. And what's significant about that is that 50 years ago, you wouldn't have a black person's face on a magazine, the cover. And if you did, you would be coupled in with lots of other people. You know, but no way would black faces be on the cover of it. So that's what I find very unique now. I see a lot of the beautiful young actors and actresses, and they're up there showing everything, and they're on the front cover, and I'm like, things have definitely changed.
Yeah, and you lived through a lot of that.
Yes.
It probably helped to bring about some of those changes as well. The group finally did, I guess, disband.
Yeah, after a while. You know what? Let me see. Flo was no longer in the group by certain adverse situations.
Yeah, she had a tough time.
She really did. She had a personal tragedy happen to her. And as we were talking about taboos earlier, she actually was abused by a neighborhood person, and it totally destroyed her. I mean, really, people
and kept it secret.
Yeah, yes, because it wasn't the time. People didn't talk about those kind of things then, and so she, you know, even people at Motown didn't really know what had happened to her. All they knew is that now she was just acting strange and acting different, and then later on she started drinking. But people don't realize that those kind of things eat away at you so badly that you do have this fear of life and of people, and that's kind of what happened to Flo. So I always, I knew that I was talking out of turn or whatever when I told the world about what had happened to Flo. But I wanted them to understand that that wasn't the real person that I knew. It was that she was tormented. And she was trying to, you try to hide your pain or cure that pain that you're feeling. So that's kind of what happened to her.
She had so much charisma. I mean, you could see that.
Flo was a character.
Flo
was a real, real character. And I just loved it. She was bubbly. If she laughed, she laughed. Everybody laughed around her. She had a Santa Claus laugh, you know. But yeah, so, you know, she left, then Flo left, Diane left. And I was the only person there. And then Barry Gordy brought in Jean Terrell, which was really wonderful because Jean has a great voice. And she was able to now carry on in Diane's spot. And bring us more hit records. Stone Love, Up the Ladder to the Roof, Everybody's Got the Right to Love, Floyd Joy. So, you know, we had a career after Flo and Diane, which for me was not very good because it was another group.
Yes.
It wasn't the same group. It wasn't the three of us who dared to dream back in the 60s, who went through those, drank out of those for colored water fountains, who were on the Ed Sullivan shows like 16 times. You know, it wasn't the same girls who had dared to dream and made our dreams come true. So when people say that to me, I'm like, well, yeah, it was a different group, though.
Yeah.
And we were lucky.
Yes.
You know, we
same
were lucky.
Name or variation on
Cindy
name.
Birdsong came in, who's a beautiful human being, and Jean Terrell and I, and we had a career after Diane and Flo. Mm. But it was, for me, very sad.
What's your relationship with Diana Ross?
We're sisters. I mean, we're sisters. We, as I said, we share different ideas. We've gone our different ways, but we still love each other. You know, it's just that we're totally different. So, times just change.
There was a painful, I guess, reunion or attempt at a reunion that.
Well, I wasn't there, so it wasn't a reunion.
That's kind of what I'm trying to get at, right? Right.
Yeah, it was more than painful. I mean, I felt like, wow, I've been forgotten. And you know, there's that. Do we have time for another story?
Yes, we do.
There was a, you know, the movie, the play, Dreamgirls.
Indeed.
Was a beautiful piece of work, piece of art. Where we were used in terms of our images, our legacy. That story is our story. But I tell people on stage, I said, but it's not about, you think it's about the Supremes? It's not about the Supremes because I didn't get paid. So, you know, they kind of just used our, who we are. So if I wanted to, like, I see you have my book there.
I do.
If I wanted to, and I think it should be a story, a movie based on the Supremes. You know, they've done it on, you know, the Beatles and everybody else, Tina Turner, but not on the Supremes. And I think that we really were one of the ones, earlier ones, who actually did help a lot of change and whatever. But they don't want to do the story because they figured Dreamgirls has already been done.
Mm. So Dreamgirls is a work of fiction?
Yeah. You know, so it's not about us. Although the story is so closely related that you would think.
Yes.
It was.
Yes. You have a solo career now as a singer.
Well, ever since the Supremes disbanded in 88, I've gone out as a solo. And
did you have to get used to being on the stage?
It was one of those
alone?
Things. It was one of those things where after we disbanded in 88, I realized that I needed to go out on my own and that I was not going to go away. But I didn't want to keep a group going any longer. To me, it was, you know, you got to know when to get out.
Yes.
Off or out. And so that's what I did. And it took me a while to really learn how to be, you know, the lead singer and to do that because I had not done it since we started singing. In the beginning. So I had to really relearn my craft. And what I did was because we were so popular in Europe that I just moved to Europe and continued to sing there until I got myself together, which I did. And, you know, it took probably about 10 years for me to really find my own niche. And I've done that, and I've done a lot of things now. I have a new single out called Life's Been Good to Me. I have my a jazz single out, CD out, actually, where I put together a show, my singing all jazz music. You asked me earlier on what I grew up listening to. I also grew up listening to lots of jazz. And that's my voice is more that. I'm more of a ballad singer.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation, some more music as well. And again, Mary Wilson, our guest today on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you currently pregnant and feeling sad, blue, or down? Supporting WHYY, the Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness is offering a non-medication depression treatment through an ongoing research study. They are recruiting pregnant women for a study using computer-assisted cognitive behavioral therapy to treat depression. The study combines a live therapist with a sophisticated computer program. More information by contacting Lisa at 215-573-8880.
On the next Fresh Air, Jimmy Kimmel talks with us about his new time slot at 11:35, the David Letterman Club he founded as a kid, and his early career in radio. So Jimmy Kimmel started in public radio.
That's right, and graduated to the public toilet.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Did you know there's a cross-country network of huge stored places for America's food, silos of orange juice? In fact, that glass you're drinking could be a year old. Also, did you get a flu shot and get the flu? Vaccine producers are reformulating the shot for next year. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with Mary Wilson, a founding member, an original Supreme, joining us here in our Philadelphia studios. She now has a solo singing career. She's worked on a number of humanitarian causes, including working against landmines. The African American Museum in Philadelphia opens later this week and runs through June an exhibition called Come See About Me, and it features more than 30 gowns worn by members of the Supremes. It also talks about their careers in a musical context and a historical context. Obviously, they became very famous while the civil rights movement was going on. And she joins us here in our Philadelphia studios, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Well, I do want to play a single, a song that you just mentioned, Life's Been Good to Me, and this is our guest, Mary Wilson, singing.
So come to the stage, it's Mary Wilson. Let's give her a round of applause.
Life's been good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet. Life's been alright with me. And I'm thankful for the life I got to live my dreams.
I travel from country to country. Was only trying to make it out the city. Never in my wildest dreams I would make history. I guess you could say this project girl got lucky.
Life's been good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet. Life's been alright with me. And I'm thankful for the life I got to live my dream.
Again, that's our guest, Mary Wilson, a new song called Life's Been Good to Me, or a song that came out a year or so ago. Nice lyrics there, Mary Wilson.
Well, the whole CD, which is not out yet, the entire CD has not been released, but the single is out, which you just heard. And I really like it because the entire CD was written not from my diaries, but they were written after my producers and all talked, and we decided we wanted to have it more biographical. So all of the songs, all 10 songs, will be songs that really kind of tell the story of my beliefs and my life, and I'm really proud that they released this one first, because the other songs on the album are not doesn't have the kind of beat. They're more of a ballad kind of thing, which is what I really care for more. But they're all, one that I really love is about my mother, Johnny May. And I hope that the album is released by the time Mother's Day come up, because it's such a beautiful song about moms. Oh, I love my mom.
Oh, you love your mom. Well, that's nice.
I was raised by an angel.
Well, it sounds like you were raised by an aunt and uncle and a mom. I mean, you had an extended
family. I had it all.
I had it all.
Well, you know, in the black community, a lot of times we are raised by our family members, and that's kind of what happened to us. My mom gave me to her younger sister because she was having a little trouble at the time. And so I saw life from both sides.
And life has been good to you?
Life has been good. Well, I do, you know, and when you say that, you know, and I like to bring it up because people oftentimes have such sad stories because so many things have happened to us that, you know, we're like, it's all, you know, feel like such a downer. But, you know, life is about up and downs, and it's about how you get on with it. And so all the things in my life, no, have not been great. In fact, I lost my son in 1994 in a car accident.
Yeah, I read about that.
Which is really, really horrific. Losing flow was one of the first things that was just devastating for me. I had no idea that that was part of life. I mean, I would get up every morning thinking life was just absolutely beautiful. I mean, I had my rose-colored glasses on. They were fuchsia, you know, all colors. But it's been one of those things where I still see the beauty in life. I mean, because we're breathing. We're here. So,
well,
there
let me
you
get,
go.
Let me get a couple of callers in and find out if they're breathing as well. Peggy from Wilmington joining us on Radio Times. Peggy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I had seen the Supremes back in 1969 at the Crescendo in New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
And you had a particular gown on them that influenced me throughout my life as I went into the bridal business.
Mm-hmm.
But the gown picked up every color that imaginable and looked like the... and every time the song changed, then the color of the gown changed. I don't know if you remember that.
Well, what color do you think it was originally, you know, without the lighting?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, you know what happens, though?
It was the same gown.
It's just... Nice and sparkly.
What happens a lot oftentimes is that the, you know, the beading on the gowns and with the light that they use allows the beads to change colors. So it's kind of hard to say which one it was. We have a lot of those. I remember one of our designers had a green dress that never really, really worked on stage because it turned to gray.
Wow.
And so what he did was he put lots of sparkle beads on the gowns, which then picked up colors and changed it to a prettier color. So it's hard to say which one you saw, but I'm glad if it inspired you. I'm very happy about that. Are you close to Philly where you can come in to see the gown collection? You might.
Yes, I am. I'm in Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, okay, Delaware. Excited. Yeah, well, then you might be able to see the gown.
You never know.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for
remember the Crescendo.
No, I don't, but I'll look into it, okay?
It was a small venue, but I
okay.
Want to be there for my prom.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. I'll try to look it up. I'm sure someone will give me the information.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Yeah,
and you
ahead.
Know, a lot of times, especially in my book, because I kept diaries. I wrote down everything. So a lot of times when I have certain things that were incorrect, I have fans who will call and give me the correct information. So, you know, we might hear about the Crescendo.
Fair enough. Let me see. But is it Veronica calling us from Westchester? Has to say, Veronica, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Miss Wilson, I have to say that you and your sisters, Flo and Diane, mm-hmm. really changed so many little black girls' lives and set the example and really paved the way. I actually ended up following in those footsteps in my own way in mm-hmm. the entertainment industry. But I am so impressed with the fact that you are still here.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Where historically, when there are groups and one person sets out, becomes the center of focus or becomes a soloist, the other ones seem to fall by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share anything in particular or what aspects actually mm-hmm. have made it possible for you to
sure.
still be here?
Sure.
Veronica, thanks for
well,
the call. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, you know, a lot of things, but as I mentioned earlier, my mother, Johnny Mae, was just an absolute angel. I was very fortunate to be raised by a woman who was just very clear in her soul. So I was able to always see that, and that's kind of who I hoped that I am, because she, even though she had a very hard life, she couldn't read, she couldn't write, how she raised three children the way she did was just wonderful. And so my brother and my sister and I, we always talk about how wonderful a mom that we had who did not have that formal education. So, you know, spirituality was always something very strong in our household. My brother went to Vietnam War, and he's had trouble all his life. So, you know, it doesn't always come out that way. I guess I just always had my eye on God, you know, and God knows I've done some things I didn't write about. So I'm no angel, but I have always tried to be, you know, do the best I could. Now, in terms of the music and continuing on, when I met Flo Diane and Betty, she was the fourth member, I knew I hadn't met the other parts of myself, and they kind of completed me, and I learned a lot from them, from their successes, from their failures, and I just have been very fortunate to have a good outlook on life, and I thank God for that.
Yeah, Veronica, thanks for the call to Radio.
But you know, another thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but another thing. Veronica was the caller, right?
Yes, Veronica
said that I really loved. She said Miss Wilson.
Yes, she did.
And let me tell you, this comes from me getting older. I'll be 69 in March, right? And it's amazing because I get so pissed off. Can I say that on your station?
You just did.
It's public radio, right?
It is.
I get pissed off. I go to the banks and to all these places, and they say, what is your first name? They started calling me Mary at the bank. I'm like, I came from a time when, you know, you said Miss this and Mr. that and ma'am and da-da-da. I'm really not happy about what they're teaching the young people today. And they are actually, the corporations are actually teaching them that. They call you by your first name. I'm like, it took me a long time to grow up, not that I've grown up. But it took me a long time to get to this age, and I'm proud of it. And for someone who is a teenager who looks like they could be my granddaughter, calling me Mary. They just said Mary. Okay, what can we do for you today, Mary? I go to Starbucks and they say, and what's your first name? I said, Miss Wilson. I think that we've lost so much disrespect, and they're training our young people that.
Well, Veronica, you get an A for calling into Radio
Thanks,
Time,
Veronica.
For calling Mary Wilson A.
Miss
Wilson.
Miss Veronica, because you didn't give me your last name. Okay.
Fair enough. You can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You've done some non-musical things that I find very interesting as a spokesperson for the Humpty Dumpty Institute,
yes.
Working against landmines. Was that an issue of particular concern to you?
The NGO company, Humpty Dumpty Organization, which is a strange name.
It is a strange
name. A very serious cause. And people may remember Princess Diana, who was the original spokesperson for the landmine clearances. And unfortunately, after, you know, she was killed or died.
Yes.
I was actually asked to be the spokesperson for that organization to carry on the word about what's going on. Going on around the world. And it's amazing because we have a lot of problems here in the United States that we need to take care of, but there are things around the world, and the universe is full of human beings, you know, and so we maybe have boundaries in countries and continents where we're not related, but we are all part of the human race. And so when I was asked to become the spokesperson for this serious condition, I immediately said yes, because, you know, I spoke of the Vietnam War earlier that my brother was in, and he has not had a good life since that. We do need to take care of our soldiers and all. Well, we need to do more about that.
Sure.
We send them off to war, and then we, you know, don't. Then we just let them try to live. But anyway, I mentioned the Vietnam War because a lot of the bombs that were dropped during that time around the world are still there, unexploded. So, and I visited Laos, I visited Vietnam, I visited Okinawa, I visited Sri Lanka and all these places. And I actually helped destroy some of those bombs, explode some of those bombs.
Literally, I mean,
yes, I
blew
them up, yes. And it's one of those things where they have communities where people live, whole families live, because one of the members have been, maimed by these bombs. I mean, children would go and find scrap metal from the bombs and take them to get money for their family, right? And then they
metal,
and then they explode, and so the kids have no legs, no arms, no feet, no whatever, husbands, everyone. So it's something that I do because I feel I'm helping, you know, and I help wherever I can.
Sure.
Children organizations, there's skaters in Harlem that I'm a part of, and that because children, I absolutely adore children. I have four myself and eight grandchildren. And so I do a lot of things with children organizations, and that can be found on my website, MaryWilson.com. So I do a lot of those type of things. And the other is legislation, truth in music.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I find that interesting, the truth in music legislation to protect musicians from imposters. And and I'm assuming mm-hmm. there have been a lot of mm-hmm. imposters of the Supremes.
Yes, and a lot of other people. And this started some years ago, I think in 1991, or maybe sometime in the 90s, we being a lot of musicians, artists, went to up on Capitol Hill to lobby to get some of these groups to stop using, not some, all of them, to stop using our names, because they would literally steal our name. Mm-hmm. There would be five groups of Supremes, three groups of Temptations, just all kinds of, and not just black groups, I mean just all groups across the board. And these groups would start their own group and use our names. And then what would happen?
And would to dress like you as well?
Well, not like us, but I mean, you know, sure, they would imitate,
of course.
And they say it's a form of flattery, but I mean, I don't know what kind of flattery that is. And the unfortunate part about it is that many of the groups were in the 50s. And so now, if I'm 68 and a half or so, some of those people were like in their 80s and they're dying or have died fighting to get ownership of their names. Wow. So, you know, if someone would take over Coca-Cola and use their name, they would be thrown under the jail, you know. But with this, with artists, people don't tend to think yeah. that it's important. And what happens is the music is so much bigger than we are that people will go and hear the music. As long as they get the music, they don't care. So we were trying to educate the public, first of all, and then to get, because I spent millions trying in the court systems trying to stop them, and I would always lose. I don't know how, but I would always lose. So this is a way we said, mm-hmm. if we could make it into a law, then, you know, perhaps we'd get some justice. And that's what we all did.
And is it a law?
It's a law, but the thing that has not passed is in the federal courts. It has passed, I believe, in 38 yeah. different states. So that's, we've done a good job on that part.
Well, you've had a busy life. You've had an interesting life.
I have, let me tell you one other thing.
Very quickly.
I'm doing the Lena Horne tribute, and if I bring it to your state, please, you know, see it, because it's absolutely fabulous. It's a tribute. It's like a play. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mary Wilson, it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you
so much for joining us today on Radio Times, a founding member of the Supremes. Mm-hmm. And again, there's an exhibit at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, just across the street here on 7th Street, opening later this week. It runs through June, called Come See About Me. Features gowns worn by members of the Supremes, puts their careers into a musical and historical context.
Women is for it's for guys.
Oh,
well.
Yeah, okay. of course.
A lot of history
guys
in there.
Like
guys
this stuff
do
too.
Love that. Okay, can you play my record on the way out? Life's been good to me.
Oh, we did that. We did that. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Heather Brumfield, our intern this semester. The program is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. And